Welcome to another Car Unload Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.
Now, Sean, we've got a special guest today, Ben Hook from the Sunday Mail sports columnist.
A great guest and also a wonderful cricketer in his time.
Welcome, Ben.
Geez, I've paid Sean well with that introduction. Wonderful cricketer. There are a few blokes who got me out pretty cheaply. Sean Tate used to knock me over with monotonous regularity. I don't think he'd describe me as wonderful. Wonderful for his bowling figures, perhaps.
But two Bradman medals. How many people have won two Bradman medals over there?
Nine.
Nine people?
Yeah, nine have won two Bradman medals. I don't know if I could list them all off by heart, but there's two that have won three, and I suspect by the end of this summer, there'll be a third cricketer that's won three. So there you go.
So if Don Bradman was playing when the Don Bradman medal was presented, he probably would have won more.
Interestingly enough, the women's equivalent of the Bradman medal is the Karen Rolton medal. Karen, of course, has won the Karen Rolton medal, which I think is quite cool.
Win your own medal, that is cool.
Yeah, I that's hard to imagine, although she is probably the ambassador for the women's cricket over in here in South Australia. She's been the number one player historically, hasn't she?
Medal named after her, oval now named after her, with the old Railways Oval is now known as Karen Rolton Oval. We were club mates. We played together at Adelaide. Adelaide was one of the first clubs to develop a women's team, and you wouldn't believe now. I mean, they don't have a women's team, and they're one of the few clubs that don't. But back in the 90s, they had a women's team, and young Karen Rolton was the one that had a little bit of potential, if you like. And didn't she fulfil that? She had an incredible Test career for Australia.
Now I reckon it's amazing the way they've restructured that oval for women's cricket. I remember playing footy there, Railways Oval, and it was a little hidden gem. No one seemed to know much about it.
They've put some money into it, and to be fair, looking back now, and they've tried to play some big bash games there for WBBL, and I think you'd make the argument that it's not quite set up for cricket at that level, where you've got to have match referees and commentators and official scorers and drug testing and all of those sorts of things, and they're probably about two or three facilities short. But from a cricket playing perspective, it is absolutely magnificent. I had the opportunity to be involved with a couple of women's Big Bash League games and also the grand final of the district, grade or first grade T20 grand final that was played there towards the end of January, and it is just immaculate. The wicket is beautiful. The surface is just like carpet. The boundaries are quite small. So at the top end of men's cricket, there'll be a lot of sixes hit. And, you know, we've spoken on other shows about technology and sport, and that's one of the great concerns, I think, about playing on small ovals now is cricket bats just they've made grounds too small, if you like, due to technology. We can get onto that some other time. But Karen Rolton Oval, named after Karen Rolton, the oval, the quality of the oval is as good as the cricketer.
So 2020 cricket, Big Bash League, etc. Did you have an opportunity to be part of that?
Not really, Sean. So by the time I'd finished playing grade cricket, first grade cricket, so we're talking about 2007, 2008, and T20 cricket was on the schedule, but it was still the Redbacks playing. They played two or three games a year. It was treated a bit Mickey Mouse. The teams would have nicknames on their backs, which was probably just a pretty good indication that no one was taking this all that seriously. You can perhaps remember the first ever international game that Australia played against New Zealand. It was at Eden Park in Auckland, and all of the New Zealanders wore retro gear. So they wore the old beige that New Zealand used to wear in the 80s, and they all grew big lamb chop sideburns and bad moustaches and these sorts of things. All well and good, and I understand that you can still get away with a bit of that in international sport and play it properly, but that was kind of the attitude of T20 cricket at the time. It was a bit of a lark. So by the time I'd retired, Big Bash cricket as such hadn't really come on board. I mean, people were starting to take T20 cricket seriously maybe a couple of years after that, but the first incarnation of Big Bash League cricket was 2011, and we're probably on the other side of it now, but I imagine you two have both been absolutely blown away by the fact that for four or five times over the course of a summer, a domestic cricket match can attract 50,000 people to Adelaide Oval.
It's unbelievable, but all the hype, I think it started in India. I think they were the ones that really popularised 2020 cricket, but Look, to be honest with you, I enjoy going once or twice a season to watch the Big Bash, and my wife has been a few times and she's always enjoyed it too. But I must admit now with the expanded program where they play many more games, it seems to have lost the appeal. I honestly didn't go to one game this season, and I had no inclination to go. I just feel that it may have been a little bit overdone. That's just how I feel. How do you feel about it, Sean?
I know there's been a lot of talk from players and from obviously people involved in the media and talking about, and they thought it was a bit overdone. And it's one of those things, is that a lot of sports are changing the sort of how they go about what they do to attract more people,
to have more interest in the media. Like
track and field have done a little bit with their Nitro Athletics. But if people are still going and there is still interest, then I guess there has to be a limit, doesn't there? Because again, cricket, I mean, like we talk about test cricket and we've talked to one day cricket and now we've got the T20. There's going to be a point where it's saturated and people are going to have to make choices about what they go and see and what they don't go and see. And from my point of view, it'd be a shame. I still be a bit of a traditionalist. I still like to watch test cricket and I'm still interested in that.
And I'd hate to see that the saturation point means that that traditional level of cricket is not going to be, I guess people aren't going to watch it or aren't going to have an interest in it.
Well, I prefer test cricket too. What are your thoughts first off on the Big Bash? How do you see this expanded program?
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. And let's go back to day one where they deliberately made all of these teams not reflect your state roots. So Adelaide, I mean, we've always, and look at you now, Sean, I mean, no one can see this, but Sean's wearing a fantastic red top. It's got the South Australian colours on it. We immediately identify with red, yellow and blue as the South Australian colours. But the Adelaide Strikers were put in blue. Perth Scorchers, we've always known Western Australia as yellow and black. They're in orange. We've seen Queensland or the Brisbane Heat, the Queensland team, you'd expect maroon, they're in teal. The two Sydney teams are in pink and green. The two Melbourne teams are in green and red. The Hobart team is in purple. Now, these colours bear no correlation to the state rivalries that we've all grown up with. So the marketing was designed so that you wouldn't necessarily get completely attached just to Adelaide. Yes, they had the name and the identity, but they wanted you to sit at home on a Monday night and be happy to watch the Melbourne Stars play the Sydney Sixers because you weren't particularly invested in one club. They just wanted to invest you in the novelty of the competition. And I think what they had with a seven-match league, that's all they played. They played every team once. So you might play three home games and four away games, and then you had your finals after that. You could polish it off in about 4 or 5 weeks. And it was a novelty competition that people were happy to buy little bits of. And if the show rolled into town at Adelaide Oval, you wanted to be a part of it because it was such a novelty factor. But of course, the crowds grew, the ratings grew for television. The TVs have said, let's have more games. And Cricket Australia's gone, let's have more games because we'll get more people to the grounds and more people watching it on television. And of course, as inevitably happens when you give people too much of something, they don't want it anymore. You know, they start to move their attention elsewhere. So the Big Bash League, after 8 years of it, is absolutely on a knife edge at the moment. And how do they try and fill their coffers by playing seven home games each season and then manipulate that with keeping the season short enough, satisfying the telecasters, but also keeping fans happy and enjoyable and being prepared to go. So they've got a number of questions to ask. One of the other issues I find is you'll have a home game on a Wednesday, another home game on a Saturday, and then no home game for 2 weeks. So it's just so disjointed. I mean, at least with football, for example, your team might play on a Friday night, they might play on a Saturday, but you know it's going to be on the weekend and you can sort of plan for that. Whereas these games that bob up 2 days after the last one, it's difficult to stay focused on that one team.
Do you think one of the benefits for players and like having a pathway for players, cricket to me seems a very difficult sport to crack the top end because unlike if I want to make the Australian team, it's only a small number of people who can be in that team at any one time. And so unlike AFL where I've got a whole lot of teams to choose from so we can have hundreds of people playing at the highest level, cricket, there's a lot of people that play cricket right across the country and around the world. But to actually have that opportunity to get to that top level, it seems to be a very competitive, very difficult thing to do. So from a player point of view, like they've got a lot more opportunity now to play cricket at a higher level and an international level.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the balance was very much stacked in AFL football, even as recently as 5 to 10 years ago. But with the advent of all of these T20 leagues around the competition, the fact that Australian cricket manages to have probably 18 or 19 players on its books, and that anyone who is on a Sheffield Shield contract now, or a first-class contract, if you like, there's probably maybe room for 120 players to earn good money out of cricket. Now, there's not that, there's more than that who can make money out of AFL football, but I think a lot of people see that in cricket there's far greater longevity in the game. It's very, very difficult to play 10 years of AFL football, whereas 10 years of first-class cricket is actually something that's, if you're that good, you're not going to have issue with injury. Yeah, you're not going to have issue with, you might have a bad run of form, but you're not going to lose your pace, so you're not going to suffer an injury that keeps you out for a year, unless you're Callum Ferguson, of course, who seems to do football-style knee injuries all the time. So they've redressed the balance. But Alex Carey is the classic example of a guy who's gone, I'm going to have a crack at my footy, and it didn't work, but I'm still young enough to have a crack at a cricket career. And look at him now, off to India to play for Australia in the one-day team.
It's amazing. I grew up, obviously, with Test cricket and the one-day cricket.
Yep.
And with the one-day cricket, I was always amazed when the World Cup came around. I just loved the World Cup. I used to watch the old one-day cricket when it came up, when the tri-series, etc. But I didn't really care that much. It was just a matter of watching it for entertainment. But I loved the World Cup and always wanted Australia to do well in that. But Test cricket was always the one thing I loved. But when 2020 came onto the scene, I wasn't as enraptured with that. I found it more, they seemed to copy a lot of the best bits of baseball, and they added in these rules, etc., etc. And it took a little while for me to appreciate the game. But you know, when you see someone, like Head, when he got all those sixes and won the game and things like that a couple of years ago, that those moments of excitement really lift you. But quite frankly, the way I enjoy cricket, seeing Head do well, I think was the impetus for him to go on further and now play Test cricket.
Yeah, reasonable point. The T20, as someone like you, Rob, who loves baseball, I mean, T20 is probably the greatest reflection that cricket can potentially have of baseball, because it's now become 120 set plays. And even in England, they're coming up with a 100-ball competition where you bowl 10 ball overs. So this is really developing towards a pitch limit style game of baseball. Now, for some people, that's quite interesting to actually watch a team before a ball is bowled, in between, say, ball three and four, the field moves because the bowler and everyone in the team knows where the bowler is going to try and land the ball. And they set the field accordingly because the batsman, they're trying to encourage a particular shot. So don't underestimate the tactical nous that's going into T20 cricket now, because as we were just talking about, it was a bit of a lark, but now it is big business. It's big business to win these tournaments. It's big business to perform well, because if you get a job in the IPL, I mean, that sets up your family. Have two or three good seasons in the IPL and you've made a heck of a lot more money than you can as an AFL footballer.
Now, Sean, you obviously come from the same type of background as me. You love your Test cricket, etc. What is it, the good points and the bad points of Big Bash for you?
I think it's hard to beat a big crowd, though, isn't it? It's that excitement. I remember going many years ago to the MCG. It was a one-day match, West Indies and Australia. I think there was like 90-odd thousand people. And it's just when you're in that sort of environment with that many people and that much noise and that much excitement, it doesn't really matter in some sense what's actually happening on the field. It's just being part of that. And same when you go to the football here, like there's 50,000 people and I'm not a die-hard supporter of any particular team, but I can go and watch any game of footy and I'll come away and think that was fantastic. I loved it. And part of it is just being part of a big crowd where there's a lot of excitement, there's a lot going on. And so I think that, and we have such a short concentration span now, don't we? Like the ability to actually appreciate a contest that will go for days and the tactics that go into it, and just someone, like a bowler bowling the same line of length over and over again, and a batsman having the concentration to stay out there all day or a couple of days and not to throw away their wicket. Those type of things, I don't think a lot of people in the public really appreciate or understand, but you can go out there and anyone loves to see a ball hit a long way or someone bowling at 150 kilometres an hour.
Well, we're just about to come to the end of this. We'd love to.
Can I just ask one thing of you, yeah, Sean, very quickly? Talk about big crowds. Has there ever, what's the biggest crowd you've competed in front of? You must have had some big crowds in the Olympics.
the Olympics were big, but the best crowd was actually in a little place in Germany, and we went there, and hammer throw is not one of the big events in track and field, as we all know. But
and it's in the field too, isn't it? So yeah, you're a bit removed from the crowd to some
and
extent.
We went to this little place in Germany, and Carl Lewis was actually doing the long jump at the time. The hammer came on, and the whole crowd moved from the grandstand around to sit on the bank on the where the grass, where the hammer was. And there must have been, I was only talking about 5,000 or 6,000 people, but I've never had that many people interested in one event.
Yeah.
And just seeing that the Germans just love hammer throwing, they've done well at it. So that was probably something I really remember.
Well, we'll definitely have you back on here again, Ben. You make a very interesting case study for sport. And thank you very much for your time. And I look forward to you coming again.
Great to be here. Yeah, once you get me started on sports technology, I my eyes start to roll back. We could be here for a half an hour. So great to have joined you for this short period of time.
So ends another Carlin Lowe Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
Sean Carlin.